Very good, and welcome to the Fed Report conference call for March 5th, 2020. Time is marching along, as they say, and so we will get right into it here. We've had a number of questions about the stock market. Mostly those are boiled down to what the heck is going on here. And so we will look at this and make some general technical commentary and then get right into questions. You know, a couple things to remember. First of all, when we're talking to clients about these market moves, especially older clients, always mention the percentages. I found that that is makes people feel a little bit more in perspective. When you talk about the market being up 1,000 or down 1,000 as opposed to up 2-3% or down 2-3%. The best analogy I can give for what the stock market is doing is my old basketball analogy, which hopefully I haven't used on this call too often. But basically, if you look at the stock market as a kid throwing a basketball out a second-story window, what happens when that ball hits the ground is it bounces fairly high and bounces all over the place, but eventually starts to roll. And that's what we're looking at here. We're looking at a market that's sharply down, sharply up, but the moves are actually a little bit less each time. And we're still nicely off the 288 lows, which I think could easily be challenged in the next few weeks, at least, you know, and to make new closing lows. But this process looks normal in that the market is bouncing around. It looks like this could take some time. And what we've been telling people that we've spoken to on the phone, we haven't spoken to all of you, is this is a prime time to find some things to invest in with the idea that we're going to deploy the money over time and you know, and end up with some decent investments at the end of March, April or so when this stops. We think that this, from a technical basis, and again, ignoring the fact that this is coronavirus and we're all going to die, this should be over in the next 2 to 6-7 weeks. We should see this market bottom out. The technicals coming in, as we've said, were, you know, very strong. So, you know, we would expect this market to resolve an upside behavior. The other thing I really want to mention, because we've seen this before, a couple things, actually. First of all, you know, not every stock will go back down to the lows that they made on the initial thrust down. Let's take a look at a stock like Coca-Cola, for example, which had a low of 52.50, it's gotten as high as 58. You know, will that go back to 52.50 on a pullback and a retest? It may very well not. So that's why we're trying to get some baseline positions. The other thing to remember is if you have a retest in the market and some of the stocks that you're interested in trading are not retesting and are showing relative strength, those are probably going to be leaders in the next advance, and you want to focus some buying attention on those. So, you know, if you've got a stock you've been picking away at and it's not retesting and the market retests, that's one you may want to look at very carefully. The other thing I'm going to mention, and this goes back to 2000 or so, 99-2000, a couple of people were trading with me around that time. I think I was talking to Jeff Garbaz. I was actually lucky enough to short Yahoo at 400, okay? The problem with shorting Yahoo at 400 was the stock would fall and then have giant 100-point moves against you. It's very hard to stay short through that. That's one of the reasons why being a short seller is so hard, and Jeff may want to expound about this a bit because he works with several professional short sellers, and Phil Erlanger does a lot of great work on short sales. In other words, the shakeouts can be so violent that you either have to say, I'm going to just be short, I'm going to put a stop 20% above where it is and go to the beach, or you have to really trade it. And so let's see, you know, how that goes, but we're trying to be very, very gentle with shorting and instead buying stuff on down days. So far, the bond market is a mirror image of the stock market in terms of its trading. And so we're, again, thinking a lot of this is flight to quality. If we don't have a huge recession, if the economy actually is stronger than people think, these bonds will come right back down. And the accumulation model suggests that that's what's going to happen. We would be looking at preferreds here for income. There's a number of good-looking preferreds like VRP that are paying very well. And just invest as an income investor and realize that this is probably going to be over 4 to 6 weeks, and we'll want to take advantage of the opportunities we're seeing now. We've had questions on GLD and GDX. Those are still below the highs as well that they made earlier. And on a market retest, they may not go all the way back up. We've taken trading profits in those. And it's okay to leave them as a hedge. Most people don't have huge positions in them, but we would be very, 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 very leery of holding those after this market bottoms out. With that, I think it's probably more germane to get to questions from Jeff than to have me pontificate and questions from you guys. So, Jeff, if you've got any questions for us here, we would appreciate those questions.
Hey, Fred. Let's start with, if you're going to remain in equities, do you stay large cap or small cap? Seems to me like you want to have a large cap orientation at this point, because small cap is definitely going down a bit more than large cap right now.
I think that you should do that, but I'm actually buying some small cap names for myself in here. I think that small cap will actually end up doing fairly well coming out of this, but again, you pick your names and you pick your spots. Most of us have large cap portfolios and had them coming in to this, so I would be mostly sticking with that. If you've got good investing ideas, let's try to get some of the same things a little cheaper, but not make any big alterations, as I guess what I would say.
Okay, so we've got three past examples of blue panics in the market. We've got bird flu, which saw the S&P fall 4%. SARS saw the market fall 13.4%, and the Spanish flu fall 24%. And if we look at where we are right now today, we're down 9.34. Even though we've had a lot of volatility and people may not think it, we're actually up from last Friday's close. So my first question is, how positive would it be if we close above 29.54, which is last Friday's close?
You know, Jeff, that would probably be fairly positive in a way. But, Jeff, I'm not looking at levels as much as I am indicator patterns. What is interesting here is we are probably, unless something really strange happens, going to have an inside week. Now, inside bars are not as predictable on a weekly basis as they are on a daily basis, but they do tend to say that some of the volatility is going out of this thing, and it would set up a nice little picture where the market could rally again next week or be down a little bit next week, but then get down and test the lows a few weeks from last Friday, 2-3 weeks, and that's where we're going to be looking for our real buy. One of the hardest things here, I know I've said this before, but one of the hardest things here is I'm looking at indicator patterns and such rather than levels, yet everyone seems to want to look at levels. And I do think, Jeff, something we talked about last week, which is a few more weeks of this will bring the monthly indicators down and give us a chance to even have some monthly stochastic recycles, or at least get the monthly stochastic down to where it was in December of 2018. So and that's my belief as to what's going to happen. Time is going to pass. Those indicators are going to come down and set us up for a decent rally into the election.
Okay, so if you're indicator driven, how far back do I know the answer, but I'm asking you so that people on the call know this. How far back do your indicators go?
Well, I've got indicators going all the way back to the 20s.
Okay, so let's take some of those. So clearly, there's a couple different parallels we can have here, and I'm going to give three kind of scenarios, and this is away from the bird flu, the drops of those three viruses that we had. We know that China got the disease in December, and now is March, and in theory, China is starting to get to be better. So that's 4 months down the road, and the Chinese stock market is kind of stabilized now. The best scenario would be it warms up in a month, and then things start to get better here because it's warming up and there aren't as many cases. And then so I call that the bad case. Actually, excuse me, I call that the good case. The bad case is what I had just said. It's China, it's 4 months. And the ugly case is that it goes, it just doesn't go away. That's like the ugly case. It just stays around and it doesn't go away. Under the good case, which is it starts to warm up in a month and things do get better. And by the way, everyone can see this themselves. If you go look at on the Weather Channel app and you scroll down on your daily stuff, you'll see it'll be a flu thing. Like Madison right now is high, basically because we have low humidity. Viruses survive really well in a low humidity environment. But once we start getting warmer weather, we go to a humid environment because we have five lakes that are all around here right now. So, Fred, let's use the best case scenario. Things start to get better in a month or so. That would play into your scenario pretty well of what you're saying, like this thing will improve. So the retest has got to be the October low, correct, for right now. And that would
and actually, Jeff, let me interrupt for 1 second and give an example. And then we'll come back to what you're saying, Jeff, about the retest and the October low, okay? Because this example I'm about to give is germane, and not Jackson, but just germane. In the crash of 87, that was a very high momentum event. And the interesting thing about the crash of 87 was the market retested in December of 87 and made a new closing low on the S&P, but not a new intraday low. Okay? Very unusual, but we have to be alert to the fact that the spider could definitely go down and test that closing low of, say, 296 and close between 296 and 288 and set up the pattern without actually going to that 288 low. I don't know if that answers the question you're about to give, but that is quite possible if that happens. Okay?
Yeah, that's
fine. And that may be the way this bottoms.
Yeah, that's fine. And then let's say that this thing goes on and we're China, which is, now let's just take it forward 4 months. We're in March. So we're talking July. Things really start to come back to normal. Then, in theory, your 2200 number could be the number that we really hit. Would you buy into that argument potentially?
Yeah, that's certainly possible. I don't think it's the most likely, but that's certainly possible.
Yeah, that's the outlier possibility.
Yeah.
That's kind of worst case scenario. Okay, so now here comes the tough question. Bonds are like the 10-year is at 0.95. At what point would you be like, this has just gotten insane, and where would you start to be a seller of bonds? Would you start to take some profits here, or would you use a lower level? Like the one guy who's done a pretty good job is this guy Sharif Kumar, and now he's saying 0.75, which to me is like the way we've been going, we could hit that in 2 days. Where would you start to be a seller of some bonds here?
I'm a seller already.
Okay. Yep.
But the reason I'm a seller is, and again, I'm not trying to make capital gains in bonds. I'm trying to get income, right? So when I see something like VRP that suddenly plunges from 26 to 24, I want to put some of my income-generating money in that. You see what I'm saying? In other words, I'm looking at the job the money has rather than trying to make a gain. Obviously, you know, I've got bonds in my portfolio. I'm keeping some of them, but what I'm really trying to do is skew upward on the income scale. You know, if I have the choice for income of buying Apollo, APO, with a yield of 8% and a company that's probably not going to go away, as opposed to buying a treasury with a 1% yield, I'm going to look at taking some of that treasury money and buying Apollo with it, especially if I can get Apollo on down days. And the nice thing about this, Jeff, is when the market is down, the bonds are up, giving us more of a capital gain to make that switch. But, Jeff, I think, and I've tried to say this, and I probably haven't said it well, but I think one of the key things for all of us to do on the call is to have a measured response to this. In other words, we don't sell all the bonds today and buy all of the Apollo today. And I'm using Apollo. I'm pulling it out of the air. You guys on the call probably have some better income ideas than I do. But I'm trying to do this over time and position so that if 5-6 weeks go by, just like they did in October of 87 before this thing bottoms, that at that time, I've done a lot of what I'm going to do, and I still have some reserves left so I can make the final switches if the markets improve. Does that make sense, Jeff?
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I'm fine with that.
Jeff, you know, I'm going to mention real quick, Jeff, you know, I get there was one man in particular, John Betts, who some people on the call know and love. Johnny sadly passed away a couple of years ago. But John would call me up, and I could tell that he actually thought that I knew for sure what was going on. And, of course, we don't. We're trying to play the odds here and trying to look at some past performance and see what happens. And that seems to me to be the response that has won over time for every time we've been in this situation, even going back to the 20s. So, Jeff, let's have your question, please.
Yeah, so my question is, look at the VIX now and just pretend it's a stock. I know you're not a huge VIX guy and doing correlations, but I just want your viewpoint from considering it to be a stock. And what do you think the one-month outlook is here for it?
VIX. Well, I am – okay, there it is. Again, we've got an inside week on it. You got to look longer term. But, again, it looks just like the stock market looks, which is – some sideways behavior and then back down.
Okay.
And you've obviously got huge resistance at 48, which it hit. I'm looking at the monthly going back to 2015.
Okay. So on the VIX itself, the level that it's gotten to, just for kind of like kicks and grins, the times where it's gotten this high before was the end of 2018 in the fourth quarter, 2015, which was basically a down year for the Russell, but barely so for the S&P, 2011, which was kind of another crappy year, 2010, where we had some outlier events, and then the whole 08 period, and then going back to 2001 and 2002, which we know what was happening there, and then 98. It seems to me that, like, if you can look at a monthly chart, this could be a lot like 98, where basically in a month we drop 20%. Do you think that that's an appropriate comparison to what's going on right now, that this could be turn out to be like 1998, where it's just a really quick drop And then from
there,
yeah,
Jeff,
we
I'll tell you what I've been comparing it to is 2011. And again, in 2011, the market made its first low in August. And it was very fortunate for me. I was with Walter Murphy, who is a former Merrill analyst that I absolutely love and talk to still. But Walter is the consummate data hound. And Walter was the guy that when I'd come in with some harebrained new indicator or something like that, Walter would very calmly say, well, let's take a look at some data here, okay? So, you know, you talk about declines. In 2011, we had the in August of 2011, we had the only day I've ever seen when there was one advancer and everything else was a decliner or unchanged. Much worse than anything we've seen on the advanced decline line here with coronavirus. And that market bottomed in August the first time and retested in October, which implied, you know, September was sideways, and then we came down into the beginning of October, and that was the bottom. And that seems to look the most like this to me. Certainly, if I were going to spend some time over the weekends looking at some charts, if I were an advisor on the call, I would take a look at that whole period of 2011. And what's interesting about that period also, Jeff, and this is something I forgot to mention, very, very bearish. Percent bears has only gone up to 20% from 19 on this. Okay? I'd like to see that 20% number at 30 or more. Okay? And in order to do that, we have to create some real fear, and that would imply much more volatility like this and ultimately lower lows where everyone gives up. We've got, to me, the complacency here is astounding in terms of the percent bear numbers. And something has to happen to make those numbers go up. And I think it's going to be time passes and lower lows. That'll do it. That seems to do it every time. Jeff, commentary?
Are you there? Sorry about that.
Yeah, something happened. I didn't think you were there either, Jeff, and I apologize for that for everyone on the call.
Yeah, so I would agree with you to a certain degree. It took until, like, the last weekend for some of Phil's sector option stuff starting to kick in, and we're not yet where we were in December of 2018, even though some of the other stuff like the VIX and have gone to extremes. So I'm in pretty much complete agreement with you on that. So here's my last question for you. The Qs and XLK have not corrected nearly what the other stuff has, the S&P, the Russell, the Dow, the mid-cap. So before we're done with this, do we need to see the collapse of, like, the NASDAQ 100, so to speak, or can this be like the reverse of 2000 and 2002, where the NASDAQ collapsed, but the S&P didn't really collapse during that time period? So it's like a reverse scenario, which is kind of funny or ironic.
You know, it could be. What I'm really looking for and what would be ideal would be, again, some lower lows on the Qs and a lower closing low, you know, 4 or 5, you know, weeks from the bottom, you know, 5 to 8 weeks from the bottom, say, in other words, towards the end of March. And again, Jeff, we've talked about the technician's disease before, right? And an example of me having the technician's disease, which is you have to get exactly what you want, is the quarterly indicators that I keep are still way up. They're still overbought. This has done nothing to correct those indicators. Ideally, we'll be down into the end of March to correct those indicators too. And all of that fits together if you're looking for 5 to 8 weeks between bottoms and what normally happens, neatly puts us not only out into March and possibly fixes those quarterly indicators, but also towards the end of flu season and so on and so forth. So, with all that being, none of that will probably happen, but that's what we have to be looking for, I think.
Okay, so the very last thing that I'm done. Simple question. Do you think we stay above last Friday's close, 29.54, by tomorrow's close? Or do you think it's a coin toss or, like, we're going down even further? What's your thought?
I think we'll probably actually, the way this thing is trading, Jeff, if we can close down today, I think we'll probably close up slightly tomorrow, which would put us probably above that close. And then the next week we can get hit again and bounce around a little bit and see what sort of setup we get.
Okay, great. I'm done. I'll open up to questions.
Cool, but that is a coin flip, everybody. We should be buying attractive stuff as we see it and slowly. Other questions, please, questions from the field. Jeff and I have gone on too long.
Brad, a couple questions for you, if you don't mind.
Sure, Steve.
First, for people who are, you know, for clients who are nervous, what about the flip side of it? I realize you like to look at your indicators, but what are some targets to let them trim a little bit on the upside?
Steve, if you want to trim it right here.
Okay.
I mean, and the reason I say that is twofold. If you've got a nervous client, you've got to sell them down to the sleeping level. Okay. We've had some great rebounds on stocks. Let's look at one of your local ones, MSFT. You know, this stock has rebounded from 154 to 175, and it's about halfway in there. I actually like the looks of the stock, but again, if you're going to trim, you've trimmed it off the lows, right? Let's look at Starbucks, some of your local names. Starbucks, again, it's down. Now, of course, everyone going into Starbucks is going to get coronavirus because the homeless people go in there, so they're all going to die, so you maybe should start to trim on Starbucks right away as well.
Yeah.
I'm kidding about that, obviously.
Yeah.
By the way, Steve, everybody should get Stephen King's book, The Stand. It is about a shifting antigen flu that kills everybody but a select few. Satan emerges in Las Vegas, and there's Armageddon. And the good guys win, and one of the heroes a dog. But it's a great book, and I hear it's selling out of bookstores.
Yeah. Well, you asked last week, I hope you got my email, about how many people are panicking.
Yeah,
and
I did get
we
it.
Didn't really,
you.
We didn't see any really till Friday, which shocked me. But, you know, that's kind of goes back to your percent bears idea. The other question is, you know, China, as you've mentioned, has held up well in here.
Yeah.
So, I know your indicators don't, or the tools you have right now aren't great for Chinese stocks, but is that a place to be buying right now because it's holding
I'm
up?
I'm buying some stuff in China myself, yeah. I mean, I look at PGJ, that ETF, it's trading like a champion. BABA is a beautiful double bottom and off it with a daily stochastic buy signal. All of this stuff, again, Steve, the only way I've found to be able to do this is to trade, and this is my way, obviously, but is to trade with the technicals and pretty much ignore the news, right? And, you know, buying relative strength slowly is a great way to make money over the long term, which is why pretty much all of us on the call are here, is to make money over the long term. So I would be looking at a lot of this Chinese stuff and very slowly going into it. If you need international exposure, China is certainly a good place to be, I think, at this point.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for all you do. These are the times where I think we always appreciate you, but especially during these times.
Well, Steve, I'm going to just say something. You know Raj Sharma, right?
Yep.
Well, Raj said something to me. We did a call with his team last Sunday. What he said was, sometimes, Fred, I look at you as car insurance. I never want to use my car insurance, but if I have to, I want the very best car insurance. And I thought that was, first of all, a very nice thing to say, but also germane. The clients don't need us so much when the market's going up every day. But in these times, we've got to keep our heads when everyone else is losing theirs. And thank you, Steve. We appreciate you. I need to call you. I need to ask you about a couple of your stocks. So we'll do that later today.
Thanks. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Other questions?
Fred, hey, it's John.
John, how are you?
I'm good. Ditto Steve's comments. Thanks for everything. And I saw the same thing with percent bear numbers at 20. I was like, well, obviously we're not over yet.
until that thing gets
a
little higher.
Those numbers need to go up. You can look at the percent bears in 11 on the monthly chart we follow, and then look at them in 2018, and, you know, we need to see a little bit more skepticism.
Would you be trading, you think, DWSH here?
Yeah, if you want to trade, Jeff Garbaugh has found that. It's a great trader and a good ETF for trading. I just, you know, one of the things that seems to be going on is, you know, if we have a down day like we did the day before yesterday and you're in DWSH, you know, I would just take that off because it seems to be reversing every day. And that's not unusual, by the way. When the market's in a trading range, the odds of an up close after a down close are just over 50%. And the odds of a down close after an up close are just over 50%. So I think, yeah, trading them. And, you know, if you have your hedges, we've trimmed some of them. But I keep some hedges for the retest. Again, you know, some of the good things about those hedges are optical. The clients see them, right? Mm-hmm. They don't even have to work. And, in fact, it's better for the clients if they don't work, right?
Right.
But you want the optics.
What about Tom Bravo Tom?
TBT, I'm actually looking at TBF because that's legal at most of the firms we use, and I am not quite ready to buy that, but very close. If you buy that over the next few weeks in little pieces, you're probably going to end up getting that back to 1850 to 19.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Fred. Thanks for everything during this.
Sure. Have fun. John, we got to do lunch soon. As soon as we don't have to worry about everyone in the restaurant having coronavirus.
Or we need an arc here to get to you to go to lunch.
Yeah. Maybe what we'll do is we'll have a virtual lunch on the phone. We'll all get order pizza.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Exactly.
And I don't mean to make light of this, guys. Every person that gets this, that gets really sick and dies, is a terrible tragedy. But you know, it's like, you know, I don't think it's in our cars, put it that way. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, Jeff.
Jeff, how are you?
Good. Hey, look at WYNN, W-Y-N-N. I'm out of it. I want to get back into it. I think eventually if PGJ and Bob are doing well, China's going to make a comeback.
Jeff, the way I'd look at this is on support on the weekly that's pretty much held between here and 90 since 2019. And let's take a look at the monthly. You know, this support area is held enough that I would start to buy this with the assumption that it's really not going to do well till the end of March.
So I think a couple weeks ago you mentioned 81 as a possible downside target. Is that still in play, or is it more than 90 range?
It is, but again, if, you know, I'm looking much more at, if I buy this at 100 and I buy this at 81 and I end up with an average price of 90, which was the low of December 31st, 2018, and a pretty solid support area running back into, you know, 2016 even, you're getting a pretty good price for something that could then move back up to 150 or higher.
Agreed. Okay.
And let's look at our old favorite for 1 second.
Yep.
GWPH, which Jeff has rightly pointed out, is one of the more fun traders out there. It's also on support, and what I'm looking at here, Jeff, and again, what we want to look at with some of these to see if they're sold out is your monthly stochastic on GWPH has finally made it down to 10, right? Nicely oversold. These monthly stochastics are sold out on some of these. WYNN is at 22. I think there are opportunities here if you start to nibble at them, and I think WYNN has a pretty good yield, right?
Yeah, I think it's approaching 4.5%, I think.
Right. So, I mean, I know this sounds terrible, but what if it's a good investment?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah, because, I mean, we are doing that.
Appreciation.
Yeah, I'm looking at a lot of things like this and thinking, you know, they may not have bottomed here, but they're probably within 10, 15, 20% of bottoms in a long-term bull market that could do well over the next couple of years.
Perfect. I appreciate your time.
Good enough, Jeff. You need me, do what you do, get a hold of me. Any other questions?
Thanks.
Other questions? Going once?
Hey, Fred, Scott.
Scott, how are you?
Living the dream.
Yes.
Couple of observations and a few questions smattered in there. I am concerned about a credit event. Started to see, you know, I watch BKLN, HYG, you know, these types of names, and, you know, we can't randomly see them, but CDS, we hear about CDS spiking. In regards to, obviously, a sub 1% treasury scenario, you know, the obvious question is, are we going into a recession, and, you know, how do, you know, below investment grade credits react and loans? You know, BKLN is, of course, the CLO breed.
Right.
So those are my main concerns. I totally agree with you in terms of the time. This is not a V-bottom scenario, but heck, we just started testing our people for the virus. So
right.
Clearly our numbers are going to spike, and that alone should bring more fear and hysteria and maybe bring your bear numbers up to what you need. So I totally agree with, I wrote down 5 to 8 weeks. That makes it the end of flu season. I guess first question for you is, can you and Jeff opine on the credit risk event possibility?
You know, I would have to ask somebody at Merrill about that. I don't follow those types of economic fundamentals. Jeff, do you have anything on that?
Yeah, I do. I think it's really actually a very simple answer. Watch Italy, because Italy has problems, and Europe has problems. And if coronavirus becomes an even bigger deal in Italy, then that's where you're going to see it first. So that's what I would pay attention to. And remember, the third biggest country in terms of holding bonds is Italy, because they're such a big insurance complex. So that's how I would pay attention to it. You know, the Chinese have already said that they're going to throw all sorts of money, and their money doesn't really matter. They can just print money and create stuff. So I don't think that China ends up becoming a credit problem, even though it definitely is a credit problem. But they're just gonna print money, so it won't be a deal. And then to your point, Scott, I agree about BKLN. That's a problematic looking chart, and HYG is also kind of a problem. But I think it starts like it always does in Europe, and this time it'll probably be Italy as opposed to Greece. Is that helpful? So, Fred,
yeah,
you want to weigh in on EWI as a chart?
Yeah, I was just looking at EWI a few days ago. If I could get that a little lower, say to 24, I would probably consider buying it. The monthly stochastic needs to come down, and some time would do that. So, yeah, it's problematic, but right now it's not, you know, certainly not a concern I even thought about. That's a good observation, Scott.
I mean, Michael Hartnett's been really present for the last couple of years, and his comments from Friday, I think, were just spot on, and I'll just read it. Regarding policies, he said, markets stop panicking when policymakers start panicking. And he says, March equals the policy panic month. Policymakers behind the curve have 3 to 4 weeks to prevent small businesses cutting employment in the EU and the U.S., Fed cuts 20 to boom, you know, obviously they already cut. China and Europe, fiscal stimulus, boom, they already did. Italy, you know, pumped $3.6 billion the next day. So he seems to be on track with that. My question, again, circles back to, is it bazooka time for, you know, for the EU, for Italy, these types of things? In other words, and we'll probably go to zero on our Fed funds rate, potentially. because I'm looking at some of these BDCs and, you know, the BKLN and anything but investment grade credit is being taken out to the woodshed on days like today. So I do have a barbell in some of that stuff. So that's concerning me. Number one, I have been layering in, you know, the DWSH, thanks to Jeff for his work on that and my firm finally allowing us to do it. So I'm building up a position to hopefully be able to take advantage of, you know, once we get these numbers of spiking virus all over this country, people are going to freak out. I have to believe. And I think we're probably going to make a lower low, but wondering if you'd comment on that's a lot there. But
well, yeah, I do. I mean, the technicals say we make a lower low by the end of March. then the question is that the bottom? I want to show you an ETF, Scott, that's real interesting in the light of what you said. Have you looked at SMEZ, European Small Cap?
FMEZ?
At Sam Mary Edward Zebra.
I have not.
That is trading really, really well.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for
that. So that certainly, at least right now, is saying that there's not a big problem for small cap in Europe. Let's look at EWGS, which is another way to look at small cap in Europe. That's also trading pretty well. And again, what's happening is this time going by is getting that weekly stochastic on EWGS to come down and the monthly hopefully to come down as well.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's John Kokolas. How are you?
John, how are you? How's everybody doing up in Williamsburg?
Everyone's doing all right.
Good.
Hey, Fred, Boeing's having a tough day today. Can you is that stock breaking down or is it okay?
You know, the problem with the Boeing chart here, John, and is that if you look at the monthly chart, it's a giant head and shoulders top with a neckline at 300 that was just tested. And that implies that Boeing is going to do much worse. Boeing could get down, based on that pure technical stuff, to 200 or so, another 70 points. And that worries me, John, mostly because I believe that was one of Morgan Stanley's stocks of the year, and the chart is saying that that one could be a fiasco.
Yeah.
You know, John, unless that gets above 300 and stays there for a while, I would just try to minimize my exposure to that name. You probably have to have it in some portfolios if you're a Morgan Stanley advisor, but I would be trying to minimize the exposure I had. And, you know, realistically looking at it, you know, 30 points on a $300 stock, that means if it goes up 10%, we're back in. That's not a huge amount as opposed to the risk of 70, 80 points on the downside.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Fred.
Sure. Other questions?
Fred?
Yes, sir.
So when someone was talking about EWI, I just kind of popped into my head about, you know, obviously China has, you know, was the kind of the first disaster, and that's kind of touching to all-time highs. Italy and, well, maybe South Korea, I haven't looked at that one yet, but Italy is certainly one of the ones that people are concerned about in Europe, and that one's not reacting in any way like China. I just thought it might be an interesting one to talk about. You know, when I was just thinking about it, the only thing that comes to mind is their hands are much more tied than China in terms of coming up with solutions, but wanted to kind of put that out to discuss a little bit.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. I think Jeff's observation that we watch Italy is a very, very good one. One that, again, one of the reasons I'm so glad to have Jeff on the calls with me is I wouldn't have thought of that. And that makes sense. Let's see how these things act. We've got sell signals across Europe now on the monthlies, and the monthlies are starting to come down pretty well. And again, some time passes. If these stay here or go a little bit lower and those stochastics recycle, we've got to be very, very observant in terms of will this thing be a bottom or not. But to your point, I think they will be a little bit lower.
Right. And then just a couple stocks just to throw at you. XPO, any thoughts on that?
Ideally, that can get to 65. You've got a weekly stochastic that needs to come down some more and a daily that hasn't recycled up. So that's probably going to be lower. I'd look for 65 to 60 on that.
Okay.
And when that daily stochastic recycles to the upside, you want to buy a little bit of it if it's something you're interested in, but it hasn't, so I wouldn't.
And one more, Sirius, S-I-R-I.
God, I haven't looked at that since it was a Merrill Lynch. My God, it doubled from our buy signal at Merrill Lynch in 2009 when it was a 2 or something. You've got a weekly stochastic that's coming down. You've got a daily that has started to recycle. So this is where you would want to buy your first position in Siri and look for a chance of getting that back up, you know, back down again in the next few weeks. And realize, you know, if we're wrong, let's say something happens and the market coronavirus goes away sooner or someone finds a cure for coronavirus. You know, if we've got some positions here, we still can buy it later, even if it's higher, and look good for the clients. And again, we have to look at the client optics right here. They're watching us all.
Thanks.
Sure. Other questions?
Fred.
Yes, sir.
Fred?
Yes.
Joe, how are you?
Joe, how are you doing? Everything fine? Ohio, good?
Doing well, doing well.
Good.
Thank you. Everything's rolling. Two quick questions. One, at Disney, what's your thoughts?
The only thing on Disney that I just want to think about here, I've seen a lot of these stocks after the CEO changes don't do as well for a while. And this in addition to having coronavirus issues at the parks, the CEO has changed. So I may be a little bit skittish here, but I'm not as positive or eager to buy Disney until I see a little bit more. On a technical basis, if we could get the stock to 104, I'd be happy to take some. The weekly stochastic is down enough, and if that weekly turns up, I'd start to add it. But this just may be, over the long term, a little bit more of a difficult stock, and I don't see a daily recycle in this yet either saying I should buy it.
Gotcha. And one more, Lennar, the big home builder, LEN, yeah.
Yeah. That's trading extremely well with a daily recycle, and the weekly is actually showing relative strength, and it's tested support. I'd start to buy that in here, again, with the idea being that we might see it fall a little bit more in the next few weeks, and we could add to it then. But that's a great-looking chart.
Thank you.
So, other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's Bill. How
Bill,
are you?
Bill, how are you?
I'm good. Listen, I had to step away for about 5 minutes, but I'm glad you were still going. Comments, please, on Kroger and Costco and B&G Foods, KR, COST,
yeah.
And BGS.
Kroger is trading quite well. It's making new highs, and in this environment, if something's making new highs, you probably want to at least consider buying some of it. And Costco's recovered almost everything. This is one of those stocks, by the way. Let's say the market retests, and this only goes and fills the gap at 288. You're going to want this. Right now, Costco, because the daily stochastic is up enough, would be a hold for me. But again, with this kind of strength, if you have positions in this, I'd be happy. If you want to start to buy them, but again, realize we may see a retest. I think what these are saying is the stores are going to sell out of everything because of coronavirus.
Right. The third one was B&G Foods, Boy, George, Sam.
That's the worst of the three, and it's overbought on the daily, so it's a hold for me. I would try to see a daily recycle before I bought that. It is a weekly recycle. Just be aware that if you're in there buying it, it's been a weekly downtrend since 2019, and it's probably, you know, it's a little bit, it's definitely the least attractive of these.
Thank you, Fred.
Sure. Other questions?
Fred, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
This is Paul. Good.
Paul,
this is
I haven't
Paul on
your
the beach
in
sitting
while.
In a state of emergency.
Right,
thank
okay.
you. I'm sitting here on the beach in a state of emergency.
What state is that? California?
Yes, sir.
Right. Okay. Which beach
Listen,
are you at?
I am at Torrance Beach.
Ah, okay. That's a nice beach, and a lot of people don't go. I used to go there all the time.
That's why we like it.
Yeah.
Question for you. We have to have bonds in our portfolio. Let's say a client were to come to us on the intraday cutout low, and we had to put together a bond portfolio. What would be your dream bond portfolio at, you know, zero on the 10-year treasury?
You know, I'd probably be buying investment-grade corporates and no treasuries at all, but we'll just have to see how that would be. But I thought my dream bond portfolio is a portfolio of preferreds, actually.
Okay. What about BRPs, convertibles, anything else in there that's like secondary on the list?
Yeah, CWB, that's trading extremely well. I mean, it really is compared to the stock market and some of these other things. Again, I think the cocktail approach for income, because, you know, we want the income, is where to go myself.
Thanks.
You know, if you could find some really good government bonds with a defaulting government, like maybe Tibet or something, that would probably be a place to go to. Puerto Rico now would probably be a good place to go. They're not going to let those things go. But again, you don't want to do all of that, everything in that, but I'd certainly be looking at some of those.
Interesting. Okay.
But again, and bear in mind, Paul, you probably know I am certainly would never hold myself out to be an expert on individual bonds. I got a guy here in Atlanta, Bob Schaefer, who I don't think is a subscriber because all he does is buy individual bonds. But he's a good friend, and I'll see if I can find him and ask him that question. I see him at the gym a lot. And
well, actually,
really
Fred, I was asking more along the lines of our managed portfolios, where we would be buying some ETFs or some funds that would be pseudo bonds, in our opinion, that would do well in a rising rate environment.
I think your VRP, PGX looks strong. Frankly, I'd be adding SPHD to that. And one of my all-time favorites, which is not available at Wells Fargo, you can certainly try to put a ticket in and see what happens, but start to buy XSHD, which is small cap, low volatility, high dividend, trades about in line with the S&P 500, but has a 530 yield on it.
Thank you.
But you might not be able to put a ticket in on that if you're clearing at Wells. Merrill is the only big firm, I think, that lets you do it.
Not available.
Yeah. Other questions? Paul,
hey,
do you have anything else for me first, by the way?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, can I sort of add on to that discussion or
sure.
add another question? I've been involved in the mortgage REITs. Like Annaly and AGNC, they're complicated, but purportedly, you know, meant to, by design, do really well in a recession because they've, like, three components to these things. Obviously, it's great quality, you know, mortgage bonds that are just levered up. So the cost
yeah.
of funds dropping after a 50 basis point rise, 50 basis point cut should be, in theory, very bullish for these guys.
Yeah.
But they also, you know, have, you know, long treasury risks, and when these rates drop so far, so fast, they try to hedge out a lot of that, and sometimes not so successfully. So, do you have any opinion on that group?
You know, I don't. I looked at and I tried to buy and missed KBWY,
mm-hmm.
which is a small cap REIT ETF that's got some of those things in it. You know, the REITs generally look pretty decent to me, and they showed really strong accumulation. They snapped back nicely from the original drop. Again, I don't know anything about the specifics, but I think you've got a great idea there.
Can you look at the charts specifically of AGNC?
AGNC. And again, let me look at a longer term chart. The daily says it looks fine to buy, and that, yeah, that's fine to buy. You might see it back down to 1620, 1630, but I'm expecting everything like that to go back down, and I'd buy it again.
And NLY in the same vein. These are really high yielding instruments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Both
Thank
of
you.
Those look, both of those on an intermediate basis look pretty good. That's AGNC and NLY. I'll see if I can find anything more on those.
The research I've heard and seen has seemed to indicate that they can actually raise the dividend if we go into a recession. So,
and that's AGNC, Nancy Charlie.
Correct.
Yeah, I'll take a look at that. And again, you know, I think that yields are going to I there's plenty of things yielding that are trading well. I don't want to pat myself on the back, but you know, my stupid ass Apollo is actually up on the day now, right? There's plenty of stuff that we can nibble at and look at that's trading quite well. And again, you know, let's just look at the formation, for example, on Apollo right here, and I'm just picking Apollo because it's something I'm interested in, but you can see it on something I'm not particularly interested in as well. These look like bottoms that we've made before, guys. I mean, these are not brand new formations that no one's ever seen before because of coronavirus. They are standard looking bottoming formations, right? So I think we have to trade them like that. And just realize, you know, we look at SPY, that looks like a standard bottoming formation. If it can have resistance here and bounce around, it looks like it can come down and make a double bottom, which is what we're looking for. So, I mean, there's nothing new here technically in terms of some of the formations. I guess that's one of the points I haven't made really well that I should try to make. Do you see what I'm, does everyone see what I'm saying? Scott, do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
We've seen this before. And the only difference is we're all going to die of coronavirus this time.
Well, my personal take on that whole idea is it seems fairly, I don't know, fairly obvious to me at least, that most everybody's going to get this thing. 80% of the people may not even realize they have it. And, you know, how desperate is it going to be for the elderly, you know, ill?
Yeah.
Unknowable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll just see. But, you know, and hopefully it won't be, and it'll be like a lot of other diseases that people have. You know, but I believe every flu, and you know, it's interesting, by the way, we still have the flu virus from the Philadelphia and the Spanish flu up in the Arctic. And, you know, the U.S. has got facilities. I was reading that thing about the Republican Guard saying that actually the United States has infected Iran with coronavirus, right? Which I think is slightly absurd. Why, if we were going to infect them, let's infect them with the Philadelphia flu. It's got a much higher mortality rate, and there's no antibodies left unless you were before 1956 or 50. I think 1958. So I'm in there. I've still got antibodies. But, you know, a lot of the younger people, the soldiers and stuff with Philadelphia flu, that would be what to do to them biologically, not coronavirus. And, again, none of that's happening. But, you know, you sit there and you think, how weird. Anyway, other questions. I've got a chiropractor appointment at 11:30. So if there's, let's have some more questions if we're going to have them. Very well, going once, going twice. This will end the Fred Report technical market call. Everybody have a great weekend, and let's see what happens. Bye now.